Now live from the Window World Studios, this is the McGraw Show on the Big 550 and KTRS.com.
722 here on the Big 550 KTRS. It was an exciting weekend in London as Americans Serena Williams and Roger Federer from Sweden took home the championship in Wimbledon. Tom Rivers, good morning.
Publicized, but in anything from...
Actually, let's...
...to be, and every year out there in Wimbledon is exciting, a different storyline, and this one was pretty amazing. Serena going for her fifth Wimbledon crown, equaling her sister Venus. Then on Sunday, the whole country was cheering for Andy Murray. They wanted the first British male winner out there since 1936. Fred Perry came close. No cigar, but he'll be back next year. He's only 25.
Yeah, I guess he had a teary reaction after the final, right?
Yeah, it showed a little bit of emotion because he's known to being a bit stoic. But, yeah, his real true colors came through after the match. He says, look, I did everything I could do. It sounded like Roddick a few years ago when he lost, saying I threw everything at this guy, including the kitchen sink. I couldn't do any more. But he thanked the supporters for getting behind him, some of which were sleeping out in the rain in tents just to get to Henman Hill, or now Murray Mound, and watch it out there. It was a sea of umbrellas out there, McGraw. It was pretty amazing sight.
You know, Murray, I heard somebody say this. I don't remember who it was, but said that he had the unfortunate luck of being born during the Federer-Nadal era.
It's true. I mean, if he had popped up, maybe 5 years either side, he would have by now at least one Grand Slam, but it's a heck of a traffic jam up there. And 30 years old, Roger looked like a kid out there. He looked smooth yesterday. He's probably got a few more in there. That was number 17 slam for him. And you still got Nadal still there, and you still got Djokovic as well. So Murray, all the stars and planets got to line up just right for him, and the other guys have to have an off day for him to wiggle his way through a slam and get to the final and actually win it. But he probably will win one somewhere down the road. But, boy, it was a tough loss at Wimbledon yesterday.
That was Roger Federer's 17th Grand Slam title?
17th, and he ties for, regarding that number 17, seven of them now have come from Wimbledon. What does that mean? He's tied the all-time men's record there, Willie Renshaw, back in the 1880s, and our own Pete Sampras. So that is one heck of a mark. By winning as well, he moves back to number one in the world rankings, and he's tied then with all-time record of being at number one with Pete Sampras, 286 weeks. So the superlatives keep rolling off, and guess what? He's been approached by his home country now. Will he hold the national flag at the Olympics? He says, I'll think about it. Let me check my schedule.
Yeah, he doesn't know if he's going to play in the Olympics, does he? I guess that
he thinks he is. He thinks he is, but I tell you, it's just he's got a lot. He's got a lot on his plate right now, and can you imagine too the people come knocking on your door saying, hey, we want you to be a sponsor for product X, Y, and Z, and boy, he's probably gonna have to deal with all that stuff too.
Yeah. All right. So, what's the latest with the Olympics as you guys are gearing up for the final touches?
Well, final touches, everything's just about done. They're, believe it or not, they're worried a bit about the rain, like as if it never rains here. But because it's been so wet, June was the wettest month since records began here. So they're a little bit concerned about that. July has been just as soggy. And Olympic organizers are saying, look, some of the events, are going to be affected by the schedule. If it rains and rains and rains, things will be postponed a little bit, et cetera, et cetera. Other things like BMX cycling, they've got a cover. So that's quote unquote covered. The equestrian venue that has improved drainage. So if it does come down, it's supposed to dry off real quick. So they've done some things. Other things, though, you just have to lean on Mother Nature and just hope that everything comes out okay on the day.
Now, what's the story about the Olympic flame going out during a white water rafting boat mishap? What happened there?
Well, it has gone out, but the world doesn't end. Interesting, too. You can get odds over here, McGraw. You can place a bet right now. Let me go down some of the odds here. It's 25-1 that the weather causes the flame to go out during the opening ceremony.
All right.
So you can take a flutter on that. 500-1. Odds that the person lighting the flame will be wearing an umbrella hat. So, They love this, though. You're probably a million to one that the person wearing the umbrella hat is Elvis. You know, it's, it gets crazier.
I'll take that. I'll put a dollar on that
you like
one.
You like those numbers. Exactly. You know, some people make these wacky bets at New Year's here, and they get the betting slip, and they just put it in a frame on the wall. So it just is kind of becomes part of their own personal heritage. Yes.
Now, Tom Rivers, I heard that ABC is going to the mat with all this Olympic coverage for us, right?
Well, we got some pretty good plans. So I don't want to give everything away, but we're going to be pulling out the stops. We're going to be having some fun, and we look forward to it. It's going to be long days, but we can sleep when it's all over.
You betcha. Yeah, absolutely. We look forward to all of the coverage. Tom Rivers, have yourself a good week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
You got it. 728 here on the Big 550 KTRS. Yeah, they were putting the Olympic flame. They're bringing the flame, I guess, during some white water rafting thing, and it hit a rapid, and the guy standing in the front of the boat had the two hands on the torch over his head, and a big wave came in, and it extinguished the flame. So, not the... Who was the Rockets? Who was the end wizard who came up with that one? Let's put the Olympic flame in a whitewater rafting situation. Anyway, all right. 728, Big 550, KTRS. Golden Oak Lending, ladies and gentlemen, is where you want to go to refinance your house. Coming in this morning, I heard a business report saying that people are refinancing now, which is putting money into the pockets, which is helping to fuel the economy. Now, I don't know what you're going to do with the extra money you find each and every month after you refinance. That's for you to decide. But the truth is, much better to put that money in your pocket and have you spend it than to give it away in interest payments. Golden Oak Lending rates so low and so well respected, they'll take care of you. They can close your loan within 2 weeks. So if you have high interest credit card debt, if your mortgage payment is up over 4 or 5, shame on you. Call Golden Oak Lending, well-respected, well-trusted. Been a sponsor of the show for a long time. They've got rates, low rates, fixed rates, 2.875%. Now, they change every single day. You can close in just 15 days, but rates are not going to get any lower. It's as low as it's going to go. Money is cheap. You hear that a lot, right? Money is cheap. Take advantage of it. If you've been turned down by the bank, less than perfect credit, first-time home buyer, you want to get into that house, you want to stop paying rent, Golden Oak Lending is the one to call. 314-567-GOLD. That's 314-567-GOLD or goldenoaklending.com.
Now live from Studio 550, it's McGraw in the Morning on the Big 550 KTRS.
7:50 on the Big 550 KTRS. Scheduled to talk to us at this point is U.S. Senate candidate John Bruner. We are trying to track him down. Coming up at 8:20, we're going to check in with St. Louis Post-Dispatch TV critic Gail Pennington. David Stokes from the policy, he's a policy analyst for the Show Me Institute. And then Congressman John Shimkus will be along in the 9 o'clock hour. There is Senator, U.S. Senate candidate John Bruner. Do we have him? We do have him. He's on hold. John Bruner, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning to everybody.
Good morning, John Bruner. Let's see. Here's my first softball for you. You and Sarah Steelman and Congressman Aiken are in a battle royale trying to say that you are the most conservative in the race. What separates you from the other two, and why are you a quote-unquote better conservative than those two?
Well, the number one issue is that I've been actually working for decades in manufacturing, free enterprise, creating jobs. I've been there in the trenches, so to speak, understanding really what's going on in terms of government regulations and taxes. And I know how to grow businesses and add jobs, and I know that big government continues to crush those opportunities that we all have, need to have, and should have. I mean, America deserves better. Missouri deserves better. And I'm afraid my friends here, the career politicians, they've been spending all their time in government and don't have that same background. I mean, they've had some jobs in the past, but what you need right now is a stronger bench strength. You need to get in there and get people who have spent their entire careers in manufacturing, in agriculture, doing things that really create jobs and understand those issues here. And we're in just in tough times, and we just need stronger people with a lot more experience.
If you were a United States senator, would you have voted for the recent farm bill?
Well, I tell you what, I'm number one in terms of agriculture, in terms of farmers. And the problem we have here right now is that we have big government working in this farm bill. And, you know, right now they call it a farm bill, but 78% of it has to do with food stamps. I mean, we have the politicians and Harry Reid messing it up, and I'm looking forward to getting into the Senate right now. And if I were there, we would have 51%, and we would have some common sense legislation here. You know, right now the Democrats all want to push, whether it's the small farmers or small manufacturers off a cliff. I mean, here we are just after the 4th of July. I wake up this morning, and I see that President Obama is taking a halfway approach in terms of putting forward more tax increases. And Claire McCaskill needs to reject the president's plan and ensure that we have some stability in the steady hand here. You know, right now, the job creators are the ones that are looking to see, is there any stability going forward here? Should we hire more people? Should we expand? And President Obama is not moving in that right direction. You know, it seems like big government has one answer, pay more taxes. That's all it can tell them.
Senator John Bruner, Senator Blunt voted for that farm bill along with Senator McCaskill. Would you do you disagree with Senator Blunt on that vote?
Hey, first of all, I wasn't in the Senate at the time here. And I tell you, here's my approach. And I think this is important for the people of Missouri to truly understand. First of all, I would have supported Senator Ron Johnson's desire to put two pieces. And that's absolutely critical because it's a trillion-dollar bill coming down the road with two totally different aspects to the bill. But second of all, I've engaged all the people in the farm community. I've had the endorsement of those folks here in the Soybean Association, the Pork Association. I am pro-small business, pro-small farming. I would also have a chance to engage my fellow senators on the Senate floor and understand where their issues are. You know, and I'd also read all 110 pages. But right now, this thing's over in the House with over 300 amendments coming at it. And, you know, this would be questionable whether this will even be passed by this particular Congress. What we need right now are business people, people who've been in here, who've done budgets, who've done planning, who can bring some common sense to the whole process. So I can explain to the folks here in Missouri, this is the kind of process that I would bring to the table. This is the kind of process I've done for over 33 years in manufacturing. And I tell you, at the end of the day, we have a clearer, sharper picture here of where we want to go and what we want to do.
John Bruner, what would you say? Your advertising has clearly stated that you are against Obamacare every way, shape, or form. What should happen to an American who is uninsured and gets sick? What should happen to that person?
Well, first of all, if we're ever going to have any kind of lower cost of health care, right now we need a bigger boat. We need more people that can afford health care, and that's a big issue. But President Obama and Claire McCaskill have failed to bring in the whole aspect of tort reform. You cannot have lower, more affordable health care costs without tort reform.
Certainly understandable. But what happens today? Somebody doesn't have health insurance. They get sick. What should happen to that person today?
Well, obviously, for any single person to get sick and not to have the health care is a very difficult situation. But hospitals have come in and provided care. Charities have provided care. People have come in. Americans are very good at taking care of each other. We've jumped in and helped each other. What we have now is because of increasing regulations, the boat is smaller, the opportunities are less, the costs are going higher. I mean, all that big government does is cost you more and delivers less. And this is the wrong direction. And so what you're having is more and more people being out of health care because of government action.
If Americans should not be forced to buy health insurance, should hospitals be forced to cover people who choose not to insure themselves?
Well, that's a great question here. I mean, I tell you, the Hippocratic Oath is always you take care of those that are ill, those that are sick here. And the big issue that I've seen in this whole health care issue is I see very little discourse with the doctors. They talk about the big insurance companies, the big hospitals, big government in here. But what about the doctors? What are their role to play? What do they feel about this? I've seen almost zero articles about the doctor's role in this whole issue. And doctors, they've come into this profession to practice medicine, to take care of sick people, not to fill out paperwork and not to be part of a big government process here. So, you know, we need to engage more of the doctors in this process here. They're the ones who are in this profession, and they're the ones that can offer the care and help at the lowest possible cost if given the freedom to do so.
John Bruner, last question for you. Have you come out publicly and endorsed Mitt Romney as your party's nominee?
I'm the only one here, and I tell you what, times are so tough. And what we're facing here with President Obama and Senator McCaskill has taken us in the wrong direction. The fact that they're not going to support the continuation of the 10-year program of President Bush here, and they're going to push forward on tax increases right now. We need a Republican in the White House. We need a majority in the U.S. Senate, and we need the contingent majority in the House of Representatives so we can reverse the course of action that we're on. My opponents have failed to endorse Romney. Hey, the times are getting late. We have to get forward. We have to pull together. It's either going to be President Obama, another 4 years, which is going to take this country down the road, or we're going to make the changes that we need to do to get the business going, to get the jobs going, to get this economy turned around. We all need to get behind and be sure that we have a good, solid, conservative Republican.
Ooh, low rates, fixed rates, 2.875%. Now, they change every single day. You can close in just 15 days, but rates are not going to get any lower. It's as low as it's going to go. Money is cheap. You hear that a lot, right? Money is cheap. Take advantage of it. If you've been turned down by the bank, less than perfect credit, first-time home buyer, you want to get into that house, you want to stop paying rent, Gold Oak Lending is the one to call. 314-567-GOLD. That's 314-567-GOLD or goldenoaklending.com.
Now live from the Window World Studios, this is The McGraw Show on the Big 550 and KTRS.com.
822, Big 550, KTRS. We check in with Gail Pinkton, who is the TV critic extraordinaire with our local hometown newspaper, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Good morning, Gail Pinkton.
McGraw?
Gail Pinkton, can you hear me?
I can now. We had some interference. I was frightened for a minute.
Well, that's sorry to hear that. How was your 4th of July?
It was hot. How was yours?
Mine was hot as well, yes.
I spent a lot of time in the house.
And you also get that whole air conditioning feel on your skin. It feels terrible, right?
I know. I love that so much, more than anything.
Yeah. All right, let's get to, first of all, this new PBS series that is being produced here in St. Louis. Tell us about that.
It's called Homeland Immigration in America. It was produced by Channel 9, and it's going to air nationally on PBS. This is the first time they've had a program in primetime on PBS.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great for them. It's really very good. The first episode, there are three parts. The first episode airs Wednesday, and it's about refugees. And although the series is more broad than just St. Louis or just Missouri, it covers the whole middle of America.
Right.
The part one is a lot about refugees in St. Louis. I thought it was a very strong episode.
And that starts Wednesday.
Starts
Wednesday on PBS. When they start producing woodworking shows, then you'll really get excited. Right?
I don't know why there's been such a lag in that.
Such a drought in locally produced woodworking shows.
When they have such a resource as yourself.
Not just me. I mean, the thousands of woodworkers out here who clearly yearning to be set free. What else is going on? Oh, Damages is back. I like this show.
But do you have DirecTV?
I do not have DirecTV.
And you can't see it.
Can I? But I've seen the other ones. I've rented the other ones.
Well, you're going to have to wait until it comes out on DVD, which will be quite a while.
Oh, boy.
Because the point of it is the only reason they picked it up was to get you to drop whatever you have now and get DirecTV.
It's a pretty good show.
I like it the first season. It didn't wear well for me. It seemed to be going over the same ground.
Right. I don't remember who's the antagonist this year?
Ryan Phillippe.
Oh, yeah.
Plays a sort of Julian Assange-type character, WikiLeaks.
Gotcha. All right. I also like Rose Byrne. I think she's kind of attractive.
She's too thin. I worry about her.
Not as thin as, like, Keira Knightley, who I've actually saw the person standing behind her in a movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how thin she is. Of course, Big Brother's back. Who is still watching Big Brother?
Lots of people.
Really?
People are very excited about it. People are asking me questions about it. And, you know, I get sucked in almost every year. And here's why. It's on three times a week.
I know. Is there anything else CBS has going on? It's like
Thursday.
CBS is Big Brother and CSI every town in America.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we've also got the All-Star game tomorrow night.
With
lots of Cardinals playing.
Lots of Cardinals and Joe Buck in the booth, so can't go wrong there.
But I've got a couple of good shows. Tonight on TNT, Eric McCormick from Will and Grace comes back to TV in a drama called Perception.
We like that, huh?
He plays a scientist who's schizophrenic. Sort of a beautiful mindish thing going on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That or Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. But if people like those, you know, sort of lighthearted procedurals there are a lot of them on cable, you know, with a strong ensemble that you get involved with, that's what this show's like.
Perception. Yeah. All right. So that's TNT tonight at 9 o'clock.
Right.
Anything else we should pay attention to?
Well, wait till next Sunday because there's a new show you're going to really like. It's called Political Animals.
Really?
And it's on USA. It's a six-part, they call it a limited event, six-part starring Sigourney Weaver as the Secretary of State.
Hmm.
It's really, really good.
And that's on USA?
USA Cable, yes.
USA
next
Cable.
Sunday, and I'm going to have a column about that on Friday.
Okay, so they're calling it an event and not a miniseries.
Yes.
Because miniseries has a bad connotation.
Well, a miniseries might run six episodes in a row.
Right.
And this is going to run six Sundays in a row.
Six Sundays in a row, and then it's done.
And, well, it's done unless they decide to order six more episodes.
Gotcha.
But, you know, they got someone like Sigourney Weaver and Ellen Burstyn, and they might not have been able to get them if it was going to be open-ended.
What's the buzz on the street that CBS puts on Big Brother, and then USA puts on a really good scripted drama like Political Animals?
Well, CBS has a lot of good scripted dramas, too. They don't air in the summer, though.
All right. So, but all these cable shows put out their scripted shows during the summer.
And, well, also premiering Sunday night is the final season of Breaking Bad, which is another outstanding cable drama.
I've watched the first two seasons of that. I thought it was really good.
Mm-hmm. But catch up.
What season is this?
This is season five, but it's going to be eight episodes now and eight episodes next year.
Oh, so it's the final season, but it's 16 more episodes.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'll see how they do that. All right. Gail, when can we read you? When can we see you?
Friday, Ghost Section, Sunday, A&E, and I will have a live chat on Thursday.
Gail, have a good week.
You too.
All right. Gail Pennington here, TV critic. She's great. She's with us every Monday, 8:28, Big 550, KTRS. Traffic and weather coming up here in mere moments. Now, you want to get away? You really want to get away? How about a charter to Huatulco, Mexico? It's the hottest place in Mexico, the newest resort in Mexico. We only know about that because Pat Blassie from Altair Travel told us about it. If she was not on the show, we would have no idea that Huatulco exists, but it's the hottest place to go in Mexico. Everyone's going down there. That's just one of the reasons why you want to talk to Altair Travel. Jennifer Williams from the St. Louis Closet Company, she just got back from a trip to Italy. She's been raving about it. Tony Grant, a friend of ours who was on the France cruise, River Cruise, she just got back from Dubrovnik. Again, another great trip, all put on by Altair Travel and Cruises. So the point is this. Family vacations, trips, honeymoons, anniversaries, trips across the country, trips across the globe, corporate travel, group travel, whatever it may be. Why, oh, why do you think you can be your own travel agent? Do you think you can be your own electrician? You can't do it. And Altair Travel, they're going to save you time, they're going to save you money, and they're going to save you aggravation. Call them up. They build a personal relationship with you. They know what you like. They know what you dislike. They know how it works. Sit down with them and figure out your next family vacation or your next business travel or whatever it may be. And also ask about Huatulco, Mexico, and a charter down there. Altair Travel, 314-968-9600, 314-968-9600. How much more encouraging do you need? AltairTravel.com, or check them out next to O.B. Clark's on Brentwood. Altair Travel and Cruise.
Now, live from Studio 550, this is The McGraw Show on KTRS.
It's 836, Big 550 KTRS. David Stokes is a policy analyst for the Show Me Institute. He joins us every Monday here on the Big 550 KTRS. David, how was your fourth?
Fourth was great, McGraw. Good to be back with you.
Yeah, where'd you go?
We were down in Knoxville, Tennessee, with my in-laws on the lake teaching my little boys how to jet ski.
Oh, what a good dad. All right. How'd they do?
They did great.
Yeah. How did you do?
I did poorly.
Yeah, do as I say, not as I do. All right, let's talk about Tom Schweik is making some news with this new audit of the Department of Economic Development. Talk about this for a second.
Well, it's a great column in the Post-Dispatch the other day by Dave Niklaus, which quotes Mike Podgorski, one of the scholars of the Show Me Institute. And it's just these type of economic projections, I mean, they're always, it's crazy, they're always wrong on the high side. They always project more than they turn out. And
right.
These types of tax credits to produce economic development, I mean, that's what Missouri's been doing for over a decade now to grow our economy, and it's just not working.
So what about the state tax credit program isn't working? I mean, are they all not working? Are some working better than others?
Well,
what did this report say?
Well, judging the state audit is specific to the Quality Jobs Program, which is a major state tax credit, where it's a...
Which, was that where the Ford thing came through, or was that a Blunt thing, or what was that?
It was passed under the Blunt administration.
Okay.
And now it was used, I believe, from the Ford plant out in Kansas City.
Right.
And the gist of it, according to the audit, is that the companies that have gotten the quality jobs tax credits, had predicted that they'd produce 27,000 jobs for their tax credits, and the State Department of Economic Development had granted all these tax credits, but there was no follow-up. And in fact, it's only been about 7,000 jobs. And that's the specific problem with that tax credit. The bigger problem is that Missouri's growth is lagging the rest of the nation and has been for the past 15 years or so. And we need to stop this reliance on tax credits as a tool for economic growth.
Also, did it not even say that not only did these tax credits not produce the jobs that they said they would, but there's not even anybody checking to see if the jobs are actually being...
Right.
People are following the law or the deal they cut with the state.
Exactly, McGraw. It took the state auditor to find this out,
right.
not the State Department of Economic Development, whose job it ostensibly is to determine whether they're following the law and producing what they said they were. They're just giving out the tax credits. And tax credits are real money. Tax credits are your money and my money and all your listeners' money from their income taxes.
Right. But are all state tax credits the same?
No. I mean, every state, there's several score different tax credit programs, and they're all different. And
right, I would argue until somebody has got to show me how wrong this is. But until somebody shows me otherwise, you're not going to convince me that those historic tax credits to revitalize downtown haven't been an economic boon when it's all said and done.
Well, I don't know that they have been. They've certainly switched investment from one place, from wherever it would have taken, to downtown St. Louis. And if you love downtown St. Louis, as we probably both do,
right,
you might think that's a great investment. But that money would have gone somewhere, but certain people determined that it was best spent in downtown St. Louis. Now, maybe that's the right choice, and maybe it's not. But it always comes from something.
But a historic tax credit, that money wouldn't have been spent downtown if that credit wasn't there.
Well, it might have been if that tax credit wasn't. If we weren't taking money from people in the first place to then give away in the form of tax credits, we don't know how that money would have spent. There'd have been more just natural money in the economy, and some of it might have been invested downtown. Some of it might have been invested for more office parks out in West St. Louis County. I don't know.
Right.
But nobody knows, and that's one of the problems with the reliance on tax credits, and that you're empowering economic planners, who as much as they may claim to, really have no idea how the economy is going to grow in the future.
Right.
You're empowering them to make decisions.
Yeah. It's interesting, and as much as I'm a fan of historic tax credits, I think we both agree that the TIF, which is just another form of a tax credit, some people down in Jefferson City proclaim that they're all against these tax credits, but don't do anything to close the loopholes with the TIFs.
Well, TIF it came close. It passed the Senate this year, some major changes, got tied up in the House. But yet, The audit from Tom Schweik relates to TIF, and that it's sort of, in the big picture, it's similar to what East West Gateway said about TIF about 2 years ago, when they documented all the jobs created for all the tax subsidies given to TIF and came out with a total of $370,000 in tax subsidies for every single job created. That's not a road to success. You took $370,000 from people, and you created one, in most cases, low-paying job for it. These programs don't work, whether they be local tax subsidies like TIF or state tax credits like quality jobs. I mean, it's just a plan and a path that it sounds great. It's everybody can get behind it, and who's against job growth? But the data is not saying that they work.
It's a great argument. Tom Schweik just released audit. I'm sure we'll be talking more about this as the season moves on. Let's get to this. Your favorite. You must love water.
I love water.
You love water. David Stokes and water. You've been David Stokes and Public Water Service, and you just can't get enough of this. Talk about some of these water conservation orders in St. Peter's and in Jefferson County.
Well, and I think other communities, several Illinois communities issued it, and I think St. Louis City might have issued one. You know, a lot of these things are voluntary. But it's still going about it the wrong way. If you really have a shortage because of a drought or a heat wave, and we might thankfully have gotten out of that with the main right. major storm last night. But if you really have a shortage in it, you need to increase the price of water. You need to say, this is an emergency situation. We need to conserve water. We're going to increase the price. So shorten your showers. And if you want to water your lawn for hours on end, okay, you can still do it, but it's going to cost a lot more money to do so. That'll get people to stop.
I agree with you 8 billion%, and it's almost counterintuitive. Hey, wait a minute. We don't have enough water. You want to raise our water rates? What politician is going to get elected by saying, you know what, we're short on water, we need to raise our water rates? But that's exactly what we need to do, because what, in effect, will happen is you'll take shorter showers. You'll fix the leak in your basement. Right. You'll put in a low flow toilet on your own. And so you'll conserve energy and save water if there is an economic benefit to you to do so.
Absolutely. And most importantly, you'll water your lawn less, which is really a dramatic use of water in our area and, well, everywhere, frankly.
Right.
And the problem is that in the city of St. Louis, I think a voluntary water is all they can do because they still haven't installed water meters in the vast majority of homes in the city of St. Louis,
right.
Which is just insane. I mean, every city in America practically has water meters to properly bill for the amount of water consumed. And in the city of St. Louis, there's a lot of good things about the water company in the city. They do a good job, but it's crazy that they've never bothered to install water meters in the homes.
Yeah, and so you could take a 4-hour shower.
Absolutely.
And I could take a 2-minute shower and we'd be charged the same. Matter of fact, I installed in my bathrooms, in my water closets, if you will, I installed the 2-button, you know, one for solids, 2 for waste, or one for solid, 1 for liquid or whatever. And so you go in and you use less water when it's the liquid. And so you hit 1, so it flushes less water, saving you money. Now, I bought it for 10, 15, 20 bucks, whatever it was. Being a dork, I wanted to do it, but it saved water, but there was no incentive for me to do so because I'm still paying the same water as the guy who has a high flow toilet down the street flushing all the time.
Right, and that causes a lot of people who might otherwise think, what can I do to help conserve? It causes them to step back and say, well, if the neighbor next door who has the most elaborate water lawn gardening system I've ever seen, if they're just sprinkling their water 10 hours, sprinkling the yards 10 hours a day.
Right.
It's not going to do any good if I conserve a tiny bit of water, so I won't bother.
Right. Also, if they did that and you still wanted to water your yard, you could get a big rain barrel and collect the water off your roof and sort of reuse it that way and sort of reuse gray water. So there's all sorts of ways you can choose to water your lawn and get a great green garden. Doing it in an environmentally friendly way, all by just raising the price or at least charging for water.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people say, you know, people who support public water or cheap water, they say, well, water is a and it comes from the sky. I mean, how do you charge for something that comes from the sky? And my answer is, well, you don't charge for the stuff that comes from the sky. You're free to go out and get as much of that as you want. You
right.
charge for the collection of it, the treatment of it, the distribution of it, and bringing it into your house so that when you flip a little faucet, all of a sudden great clean water comes out. I mean, that's what you pay for. You want to go get your own water off your rooftop and use it in your yard, you're free to do that all you want.
So you're telling me that as an official spokesman, as a policy analyst for the Show Me Institute, you would have no problem with raising fees or on water in the city of St. Louis?
Well, I would like to see water meters imposed in the city of St. Louis so that people get billed by the amount of water that they use and not some estimate. And secondly, yes, in true emergency situations, droughts, heat waves, and the like, I would agree with, instead of these voluntary orders, which really aren't going to work, I would agree with allowing price increases in those situations to result in less water use.
There are places that then, and in some droughts, they produce fines. If someone's seen watering their yard, they will give you a fine. Would you be in favor of that, or would you just be in favor of some type of emergency raising of fees for water usage?
I'd be in favor of increasing the price, and then if you got to a truly catastrophic drought situation,
right.
then we can talk about fines and the like. I don't think Missouri has seen we certainly haven't been in a truly catastrophic drought situation.
Right.
We probably aren't that close to it.
Some people will say that's a form of raising taxes. Would you agree?
No.
It's a user tax or a user fee, I guess.
It's a user fee. It's like toll roads
right.
or things like that. I mean, the services we use cost money. There's no such thing as a free lunch,
right.
No matter how you look at it.
Right.
So when you use services, be it water or highways, you have to pay for it. And when you can pay for those things with accurate market-based user fees, that's a good way to do it, in my opinion.
You see, there's all sorts of common ground in this world. See that? We agree. David Stokes, ladies and gentlemen, policy analyst for the Show Me Institute. What's your website?
ShowMeInstitute.org. Blog is ShowMeDaily.org. And you can follow me on Twitter, at David C. Stokes.
And the kids are now rocking and rolling on the jet skis.
Nate at 5 and Ryan at 3 had their first jet ski rides this week. They loved it. The one-year-old, we didn't quite bring her out on there yet. Maybe next year.
All right, good. 848, Big 550 KTRS.
McGraw-Milhaven on KTRS.
.9 Big 550 KTRS. Our good friend, Congressman John Shimkus, who was 15th district, is that right?
The new 15th. I represent the 19th.
You represent the 19th. It will be the 15th district.
It will be the 15th.
Okay, good. You've been coming on the show now. It's got to be 11 years now, Congressman Shimkus. It's always a pleasure. Good to have you back.
It's great to be with you, McGraw.
You're back for your summer recess? You're
no,
going back, or what are you doing?
I'm going to the airport from here. We go back to votes. We've got to vote one more time to let the public know that we really don't like Obamacare. As if they don't know it now, we're going to give them one more chance.
Breaking news. The Republicans not happy with Obamacare.
Right.
We haven't spoken to you since the historic Supreme Court case, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, and that's why you're here. But you have a little bit different position, do you not? Tell me what your health care position is on all this.
Well, I really think that the big problem with our health care system is that, kind of like you were talking about as I was driving up, you know, people only understand things that they have to pay for.
Right.
So we really have to get to a market-based system that people actually understand that there's a cost for health care.
Right.
There's a cost for unhealthy living. There's there's some people who are going to be genetically predisposed, you know, that are,
right.
they're going to have incur a lot of costs, and that's where we as a compassion nation have to be there. But, you know, why do we put everybody into one big pool and say, you can be overweight, you can smoke, you can drink excessively,
mm-hmm.
but we're being there to take care of your health care.
But not only that, you're paying the person who smokes and drinks and is 80 pounds overweight pays the same as the person who works out 5 days a week and is a health nut.
And we do know people who are healthy sometimes die of cardiac arrest. I mean,
right.
those stories are out there, but still. So I would love to see us appreciate the fact that the capitalist system provides the highest quality service at the lowest cost if you allow free and unfettered capitalism competition.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to get people into insurance pools and allow them to then let the companies then compete. You know, Mitt Romney did that, tried to do that in Massachusetts as governor. The real debate on the health care law is, can the national government force someone to do this based upon the Constitution? And the Supreme Court said, no, they can't. But the Supreme Court said, but we can force them to do it by through our power to tax.
Right. But you've also said that you would be in favor of some type of catastrophic care,
oh, yeah.
that everybody must have some type of catastrophic care.
And you could do that through the states.
And you would want the states to force people to buy catastrophic care.
Well, I think you either have a catastrophic, you have a health care exchange where mm-hmm. people can go, like Medicare D, they can go into the computer, they can see what kind of their options are, they can compete, they can say, hey, I'm a smoker, just like we do with life insurance.
Or car insurance.
You know, I have no moving violations, or I do have a couple DUIs, and, you know, and just let the market then take care. There's always been an attempt to move to catastrophic health pools where states may regionally join together to make sure that the uninsured have health insurance, and that could be rolled in. But the basic thing is everything has a cost. People should have responsibility, and we ought to help people at least have catastrophic coverage.
Let me ask you this question. You and I are friendly. We're friends. You've on the show so many times, I don't ask you any more gotcha questions because there's nothing left to ask you. So let me ask you this question. It seems to me that the Republicans and Democrats could sit down in a room and really iron out whatever philosophical differences there are, right? Okay, so Obama and Romney want to force us to buy health insurance, but you're saying incentivize it.
Right.
So if you don't buy health insurance, you won't get insurance from the hospital. So you don't force people, but you incentivize them to where it's almost would be stupid for them not to buy. It seems like if you really wanted to, you could spend 15 minutes in a room and come up with something that would work for everybody.
I think if you watch some of the stories over the weekend, I think you've identified possibility of some common ground on what is incentive. And we've always talked about this before, because you could, if you are a self-employed individual and you're buying your own health insurance,
right?
Should you not get the benefit of the same tax write-off that a major corporation gets
right.
if they have a? So does that incent the self-employed to provide health insurance? Of course it does.
Right.
Because they're getting a tax benefit to do that. That's one of the issues. Or associated health plans. If you are a member of the Missouri Farm Bureau and there is a large group and you're a member of that, should the Missouri Farm Bureau be able to collectively purchase and negotiate for health insurance
right.
for their membership of their – that's called associated health plans.
Right.
So
– but that's a form of an exchange or a
well,
health pool, is it not?
That would be, but that's also incentivizing people. I mean,
right.
as you know, the premise of your question.
Right. And forgive me if this is incorrect, but Medicare Part D, which is the prescription plan, that incentive that only works if everyone joins in, right? So didn't Congress incentivize senior citizens to register for prescription Part D, and if they weren't in it, it cost them a lot more to get the drugs?
Well, yeah. Remember that when we passed Medicare D, there was no prescription drug coverage for Medicare people.
Right.
So there was nothing. That was the whole debate. Here, I mean, I would just go back to the history of Medicare D. It's a great a case study on the differences between the two parties. One would say, well, let's just add a prescription drug benefit and let Medicare pay the bill.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that would be about $1 trillion and $1.5 trillion cost.
Right.
Well, what Republicans did is we said, no, we're going to let the market create exchanges and bring people in there to compete. So now we have higher quality, high approval ratings, and much lower cost than was ever imagined on the expansion of Medicare D. Now, in all honesty, my real conservative friends, I'm very conservative, still think that was a raw deal. I mean, we still get beat up for Medicare D.
Right.
But the proof is in the pudding. It's been a tremendously successful program, a lower cost, higher approval ratings, and in modern medicine today.
But it's clearly government subsidized.
Well, there was a government expenditure.
Right.
But do you want $1.5 trillion?
No.
Or do you want
$248
billion or whatever it was?
But I find it interesting in this country where people complain about health care costs, but people over 65 have health insurance that's subsidized. I am not allowed to opt out of my Medicaid insurance that comes out of my check every month, right?
Right, right.
Because
your Medicare, your FICA,
right.
Part of that.
I'm being forced to pay for my health insurance when I'm 65, but I'm not necessarily forced to buy my insurance when I'm 45.
Right, exactly.
And so people who choose not to buy health insurance, there's no disincentive because if you're not either you're stuck at the job because you can't get insurance on the open market,
right?
Or it's too costly to buy whatever. So I'll just go without, and then when I do get sick, God forbid, everybody else is picking up my dime.
Right, right. And so, part of this debate is how do you get people involved and engaged and knowledgeable, and of course there'll be some people who will ball all in. I mean, they're going to start looking at the prices, looking at the coverage, there'll be some people who just blow it off. Now, under the Obamacare decision, either they get health insurance, or they're going to be taxed.
Right.
They're going to be penalized, and the IRS is going to go after them for some cost. We don't have to relitigate that whole debate.
But I quite frankly don't mind taxing somebody who's going to get service anyway, right? I mean, they're getting something for free, so they should be forced to pay for it.
But our problem is not just that. Our problem was $500 billion and 20 new taxes. Our problem was $500 billion cuts in Medicare. I mean, the whole healthcare law, you have to pass it before we know what's in it. When it keeps getting rolled out, it's going to cause major shifts in the economy. When we're trying to grow, I mean, I just used a Bloomberg article where this thing will eat up all the net profits of this one company to go to healthcare. Another one says we're just going to go to 30-hour employees and part-time employees. And I mean, it's just it's going to cost business, and they're going to find a way to have their costs mitigated.
Congressman John Shimkus, our guest. This farm bill, do you like it? You don't like it?
Well, I mean, we don't know. Here's a good dodge. We don't know because it's got to move through the House Ag Committee. That's what's going to happen this week. So there'll be amendments offered. There'll be amendments rejected. And so by the end of this week, the ag bill hopefully will be passed, and I'll get a good chance to look at it.
But it passed the Senate, correct?
Yeah, but, they really don't do any work there. So, I mean, the real work is done in the House, and we'll have to see what they do. I mean, bottom line is we know that two things. We know that direct payments to farmers are gone. We know that there's going to be anywhere from $20 to $35 billion cuts in the overall five-year authorization for the ag bill. What my producers really want is to make sure that there's an ag insurance component policy in the plan. Now, you've been following the drought.
Right.
I mean, if you get south and east of here in the part of my district, the deep south, they've lost their corn crop already.
Right.
If they don't get rain, and this rain's been spotty. I mean, I was at the muni last night. We got rained on.
Right.
It dumped a whole bunch of rain in O'Fallon on Saturday night.
Right.
Collinsville,
it's also
not a drop.
It's also it's also not very good rain, right?
I mean,
there are some rains that are good. There are some rains that aren't. I mean, this too fast.
My folks will take any rain in some of these areas.
Right.
But so the question is, they can do everything right, and then the weather turns. If the farmers are willing to pay into an ag insurance policy and plan, and the only way it's offered right now is the government's somewhat assistance, it's that shared risk, shared response. It's better than disaster payments. Years ago, droughts would come. Uncle Sam would just, pay out the money. We can't do that anymore. So we're going back to the same debate. Mitigate risk, have an ag insurance policy in which the stakeholders are somewhat fiscally on the hook, have some skin in the game,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I'll be looking for.
Yeah. How's your basketball game? Have you been invited to the White House to play basketball?
No more basketball. No more basketball.
I thought there was a little peace offering there. I thought things were...
That was about 3 years ago. So. I have a picture. I had to bring it by sometime, but it's in my townhouse in Washington, and about half of those Blue Dog Democrats that played that day are no longer members of Congress.
They all got wiped out
in the election.
Is it worse? You've been there how long?
16
years.
Yeah.
What's the biggest difference between the first year and this year?
For sure, couldn't find the bathroom, and now I know where they're at. So.
Come on, seriously. I mean, what? I mean, is it because we hear it's worse than ever?
Nah.
No.
I reject all that stuff.
You do.
I mean, well, I people have to understand that we're not there to be sitting around a campfire singing Kumbaya.
Right.
I mean, we're there, many of us believe, both sides, fighting for the Republic, however you define that to be.
Right.
And so what I think people really don't get a good perspective, and I think C-SPAN's part of the reason.
Right.
So when people go on the floor and they're going to vote, they're going to fight about some or issue or have a – it's really the extremes that want to get to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Most folks say, okay, let the committee have this process and – we'll let them move it. We'll cast our votes. We'll be held accountable for votes. What people don't see is when, you know, maybe I'm really going after someone. I've been on this thing on nuclear waste for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a person who doesn't like my position, and she may come up after me and yell at me and stuff on the floor. But then in the elevator, I mean, she's still not pleased with me, but, you know, we'll joke and, I really got you there. And, you know, you.
So when the cameras are off. Your friendlies could be, and how's the kids, and how's the wife, and good to see you, and have a good trip.
Yeah.
And, but when the cameras are on, you scoundrel, you.
Well, we don't call. I mean, I don't even think most people call them scoundrels. It's my friend, my gentleman friend,
but they say
Massachusetts,
with the distinguished gentleman from the 15th district. You are horse's backside.
Have no idea what you're talking about. Come to my district, and we'll show you what it's like in rural Illinois with no rain.
I want to ask this question correctly. You have not played the game in terms of getting on MSNBC and CNN and Fox, and you haven't looked to rise up the leadership ladder and do all you, that hasn't really been your game, has it?
Hey, listen, I've been on KTRS. I mean, what else really need
know,
to
what,
go on?
Why
would I go anywhere else? So, No, the answer is I think people they make decisions on a path. You know, I'm fortunate to be on Energy and Commerce Committee.
Right.
I just want to do the policy work.
Right.
The leadership role, I mean, you kind of roll the dice. If you want to take that shot, it's like a pyramid, and there's competition, and you could fall off, you know, the wayside pretty quick.
Right.
So, you know, I know who I represent. Steve does a great job in making sure that I'm available, accessible to all the dailies and the weeklies and
right.
the biweeklies and the smaller stations
sure.
that are spread throughout rural America. And that's who I'm responsible and accountable for. I do get people harass me on some of my new media sites, and they say, "You loser, why don't you get on Fox and, you know, go get them?" You know?
Right.
And, that's just not my stick. I've had to do it a couple times, but not that I'm really drawn
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah. Any interest in senator, governor? Anything?
I get asked that. I mean, it's very kind. I've been a member of Congress for 16 years. But, you know, in the state of, you know, Missouri, you've got, you know, Kansas City, and then you have St. Louis. And
right.
I'd be kind of like the person from Columbia. You know, kind of in the middle,
right?
Rural part of the state.
Yeah,
how do you get known in St. Louis? How do you get known?
Downstate doesn't get as much.
Well, I'd have to spend all my time up in the Chicago area, which I'm not in Illinois. I'm proud. Chicago's a great city,
right?
But I still have my youngest is still 12.
Mm-hmm.
I get to many of his sporting events as I can, and I've got one who's going to be a senior in high school, and one's going to be a sophomore in college, and between D.C. and home and this. Monstrous. My current district is parts of 30 counties. My new district is parts of 33 counties.
Right.
I'm.
You're busy.
I'm busy.
Yeah. So, you're busy. No, fair enough.
Yeah,
fair enough. How long do you think you'll keep doing it?
you know what? As long as if I find it enjoyable and I think it's worthwhile and the people keep sending me back.
And your wife says that's enough.
And my wife says that's enough. Although she's very busy, too. So sometimes it's the shoes on the other foot. So sometimes she's so involved, and she works at a church organist.
Right.
And she spends a boatload of time there. And sometimes I wonder, man, how many hours a day can you spend at the school and at the church?
Right.
So I think it's kind of both of us we'll be looking at.
Last question for Congressman John Shimkus, then we'll let you get back to the airport and off to Washington to vote against Obamacare.
did I tell you we were going to do that this
week?
Yeah.
I don't know if you mentioned that. If asked by Governor Mitt Romney to be the vice presidential nod, would you accept?
Oh, that's – yes.
You would?
Yeah.
Breaking news here on 550 KTRS. All right, so you would accept. If asked, you would accept.
I would accept.
Are you being vetted right now by the Romney campaign?
No.
Is that no or no comment?
Oh, that's definitely no. He did come to Collinsville. We weren't there because we were on the eastern part of the state. We did endorse him late before the primary. This Obama economy is killing us.
We need
a businessman to help us recover. But I'm not even a dream. I'm not even a glimmer in the national political folks' eyes. So,
but however, if asked to serve, you would serve as vice president.
Gosh, I mean, it would be a great honor.
Absolutely. Congressman John Shimkus, safe travels. Always good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, McGraw.
All right, 928 here at Big 550 KTRS.
McGraw in the Morning continues on the Big 550 KTRS.
It is 940 at the Big 550 KTRS. Don't forget the Facebook page at McGraw Millhaven is the Twitter account, the iPhone, the Android service, all of that available to you. You can listen to KTRS whenever or wherever you are. John Stossel, formerly of 2020, who is now on Fox. I love John Stossel. John Stossel's the best. John Stossel, I also like John Stossel because he had written into his contract when he was at ABC early on that he would do no live broadcasting appearances. And the reason why he would do no live broadcasting appearances is because he had a severe, severe stutter and that he would tape everything. Now, he has since gotten over that, and he has since done things live, but he was an inspiration to me. And I've never really met him face-to-face, and I talked to him in person. And what's interesting is a lot of people who meet John Stossel think he's a jerk. They think he's arrogant. They think he's aloof. They think he's just a big, fat jerk. But what people don't understand is he's trying to formulate the words, and he can't get the words out. And so it's sort of stuck. So if you ask somebody a question, you're like, hey, you know, excuse me, can you tell me, you know, where the bus station is? And there's a pause, and they say, well, four blocks down. You think, well, that guy wasn't very friendly. He's kind of a jerk. That's, you know, people say that about John Stossel. They think he's a jerk, but he's just trying to get the words out. Anyway, the reason why I bring this up is he's now switched over to Fox. And John Stossel dressed up as a homeless person and took a camera out. And he says he's a libertarian. He says that we're turning into a nation of freeloaders. And he says, he was asked, have you ever been a freeloader? And he says, I freeloaded off my parents. He says, and to be fair, it's wealthy people who do most of the freeloading, corporate welfare, farm subsidies. He says, I collected federal flood insurance because I had a beach house, which was a great story he did. He had a beach house, and he he said it was all perfectly legal and that he was eligible for flood insurance, and he got flood insurance. So what he did was he put on a fake beard and dirty clothes and walked around a street with a styrofoam cup, and he held a sign that said, homeless and cold, anything will help, please. please, God bless. What did he find out? He found out that for the few hours he did it, he made enough money, people gave him money, that if he would have done it full-time for a year, about $24,000. He also said it was tax-free because nobody took. I'll give you a dollar, but please, I have to give 20% to the federal government. So there was no FICA insurance that he had to pay. So he says, now this is just him holding up a sign that says, hungry, homeless, please, anything will help, God bless. He earned, he says, if it was prorated, to $24,000 a year. He also held up a sign that read, I'll be honest with you, I just want a beer. And he said that he collected about the same amount of money. So the same amount of money went to, I'm tired and I'm homeless, please, anything will help, God bless. And, hey, I just want a beer. So people gave regardless of the sign. They just gave. And what's amazing to me is that giving money to a homeless person is the worst thing you can do. There is, it gives you some type of good feeling. I'm at a stop sign, and this guy looks down on his luck. He doesn't have any teeth. He hasn't shaved in a month and a half. Who knows when the last time he showered. Look at all this. I got an iPhone. I've got a trunk full of stuff. I got kids. I got to do this. And I'm driving this nice house. I feel terrible. Let me roll down the window. I'm in this air-conditioned car. Let me roll down the window. I'll give him $5 just to make myself feel better. What are you doing? You're giving $5 to this guy who was probably going to go use it for drugs or probably going to go use it for alcohol. If he were truly wanted help and needed help and needed food, he would go to the St. Patrick Center. Have you ever said to a homeless person, these will work for food. You say, you know what? I've got a whole bunch of brush in the backyard. I got, no, I can't do it. Will work for food. Okay, you know what? Hop in the back of the truck. I'll bring you to McDonald's, and I'll pay for it. No, that's all right. I'll just give me the money. Yeah, sure, you really want the food. All you're doing by giving homeless people that money is you are satisfying your own guilt. That's all you're doing. You're not giving money to help him. You're giving money to satisfy your own guilt for this man being homeless, or this woman being homeless. And look, they're good. They're really good, especially the ones who are pregnant, right? You're like, pregnant, need help, right? You know what? There are places for these people to go to get help. There's a famous interview with a homeless person who was like, why should I go get a job? People bring the food to me. So these churches who actually think they're doing good work are actually doing the opposite. I mean, I know it's counterintuitive, and you want to help the homeless people. But the truth is, you want to help the homeless people? Make a donation to the St. Patrick Center. Volunteer at the St. Patrick Center. The St. Patrick Center is world-renowned, a great homeless shelter that will actually help the chronic illness of homelessness to get them back up on their feet, get them the meds they need, get them off the drugs and the alcohol. And lastly, was in the middle of a conversation, I won't tell you who it was, but was in the middle of a conversation in Paris, France, socialized Paris, France, where if you don't have enough, they give it to you, right? If you're down and out, you government programs and all that. There are still homeless people in Paris. How can that be? If it's supposed to be socialized, if it's supposed to be much more compassionate and much more caring, there are still homeless people in Paris. How can that be? Some people just want to be homeless. I don't know. I thought this story was kind of interesting with John Stossel, so I thought I'd pass it along and give you my 2 cents. So there you go. That's my 2 cents. But I didn't give it to you. I gave it to the St. Patrick Center. 848 here on the Big 550 KTRS. How are you watching TV in the 21st century? How about AT&T U-verse? AT&T U-verse didn't go out last night. When the clouds and the rain came in, AT&T U-verse still had crystal clear technology. Crystal clear HD signals. 170 HD channels available. Perfect for movie lovers and sports fanatics and anybody who just likes to watch a good picture. $29 a month, AT&T U-verse wants you to switch over. $29 a month for the first 6 months. Talk to anybody who has AT&T U-verse. They'll tell you the exact same thing I'm telling you about. They love it. By the way, this offer of $29 a month for 6 months comes with a total home DVR included, free for life. HBO and Cinemax get it free for 3 months. AT&T U-verse is better experience. More HD channels, digital rich picture, and picture-in-picture channel browsing as well. 1-877-ONLY-AT&T. Visit an AT&T store or just click AT&T.com/TV. Some geographic and service restrictions apply. Price for you family TV. New customers only. After promotional period ends, standard rates apply unless canceled by customer. Tax and other charges apply. Offer ends 11-3-12. Access to HD at additional cost.
McGraw in the Morning continues on the Big 550 KTRS.
All right, it's 9:53, Big 550 KTRS. Steve Cochran comes your way. And then we've got Martin Kilcoin and Trish. And then we got Frank and the Gang. And then the Sports Guys at 6. And then John Carney comes your way, top of 9 o'clock, 9 to midnight. And then we got George Norrie. I see a story where George Norrie is now getting ready to start an anti-cursing campaign. I read that in the trades. I thought I read that George Norrie is out with his new book. He's out. I thought he was starting some type of anti-cursing campaign or cruising campaign. You know what bothers me? You know what? You know what really bothers me? I've noticed this more and more recently. And not that I have the King's English down pat, because we can all improve, and I'm not very good at it. I'm okay at it, I guess. But you know what really bothers me is ending the sentence in a preposition. So you would say something like, I don't even know how to. Where did you go to?
Where are you at?
Where are you at?
That's the most popular one.
Right. But where are you at? And a lot of people use of. Something. But you know, where are you at? That it just grades on the ear. You're like.
It's an extra word you don't even need. Where are you?
Right. And so what are you supposed to say to someone? Are you supposed to say, I'm sorry, that's not proper? Now, you know, I say, you know, who is it? And people are like, whom? And I've never gotten the who and the whom down. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what are you supposed to do? And you're like,
if it's a 12-year-old or a 7-year-old, you correct them.
But if they're a 40-year-old, you just let them be an idiot?
No, because they're a grown man, and not your place to correct them.
All right. So what about an 18-year-old?
I can go either way with that.
Okay.
They're not going to listen either way.
I just, more and more, I'm hearing even business people who say, you know, where are you at? And like, now look, on a Saturday night when you're out with your buddies, I'm not expecting you to, you know, have the proper English. But, you know, in a work setting or a business setting or a something setting where they're like, where are you at? You're like, whoa, hey, that's like wearing a tattoo that says shag nasty. I mean, there's just a, I don't know. But, I mean, it's really, language is really important, much more than anything else, I think. Now, granted, I make my living using language. But it just seems like, you know, if you can't speak, there's no greater way to get ahead in life than to speak properly. If you speak properly, you know, it will go. You will go so much further.
I'm not sure if it helps you, but it definitely hinders you if you speak poorly.
Yes, no question. And so, people who want to, you know, you know the old saying, dress for the job you want, not the job you have. Well, you don't speak for the job you want, not for the job you have. It's my two cents. Where are you at, Steve Cochran?
Holler at your boy.
By the way, you know what word I've been using recently? Diabolical. It's a great word. Speaking of words, he's diabolical. That's diabolical. Have a great day, everybody. We'll do it all again tomorrow. A tout à l'heure.